And welcome back, everybody, to the Spartans, Wolverines, and Beards podcast. You got Jordan, you got Lane, you got us both, the whole team. We're back again for our second week in a row. 1 week closer to college football starting. So
hallelujah.
At least Big Ten football starting. Our second week in our partnership with the Watershed Voice here locally in St. Joe County. So if you haven't already, first and foremost, like our podcast on any platform you'd be listening to, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, any of the streaming podcast sites we're on. And if you haven't subscribed to Watershed Voice, please go check out their page, their information. It's a great local source for all of your news. And now your two sports guys for the Watershed Voice are right here with
you.
And
what a better reason to subscribe to Watershed Voice than because we're part of it.
Yeah, I mean, you get more of us.
Exactly.
I've been wanting more of me for my entire life.
So
it's just,
I could take that so many ways.
Yeah, well, you know, that's open to interpretation.
Yeah, that's fair. With Watershed Voice, you know, I think it's as low as about $6.50 a month you can get a subscription for. Like Jordan said, a lot of cool news stories, local news. On top of that, also, there's quite a handful of podcasts that are partnered with Watershed Voice. Of course, us, Spartan Wolverines and Beards Podcast. But also a couple of podcasts I just want to shout out is I Can Marvel All Day. Shan and Hoagie really break down the Marvel Universe, anywhere from movies to the comics, and have some general discussions about that. And also another good podcast on there is A Bridge to Understanding, where it's Hoagie and his guests, and they just sit down and try to come to a better understanding in this crazy, crazy year that we call 2020.
Yeah, so that... about the A Bridge to Understanding, actually myself and Lane were trying to set something up with Hoagie before this whole Watershed thing happened to have a conversation, because something that came up in our daily lives, the conversation that we had had, and he had reached out to us. So it's a good podcast to get different opinions about different situations. It's trying to make everybody kind of get on the same page in this world,
which in today's day and age it's a little hard to do.
It's no small exactly. Task. And that and the I Can Marvel All Day thing, I might have to hit them up. I got some input on those. I mean, I'm a Marvel nut.
See, so there you go.
I might have to make a guest appearance. We can do a cross podcast appearance here,
like,
or something.
It.
So yeah, I think going forward, I'll preview our show a little bit. We'll recap the high school football matchups from last week. And we'll touch on the upcoming week's matchups. A couple of pretty good games on the schedule, if I do say so myself, from looking at it. Also, some other... We said we were going to try to delve a little bit more into the other sports. We're going to touch on that just a very little bit today. There's a couple big volleyball matchups this week. And after that, we'll get into some college football. Not really a huge news week in college football. Touched a little bit on the Big 12, some on Lincoln Riley in Oklahoma, maybe a dark horse here or there. And then segment four, we'll do the Lions, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Spoiler, there's only ugly.
I was going to say, based on previous, I'm going to go on a limb and guess that there's going to be a lot of bad and ugly here. And then when it's all said and done, we'll wrap this thing up and shut it down. I think that's about all we had for preview-wise and news. Lane, did you have anything else to touch on before we get
rolling? I'm ready to roll in some high school sports.
All right, man. We'll take a quick break, and we will be right back in here. All righty, folks. We're back in here, and it is time for your local sports recap here in St. Joe County. We will quick run down last week's scores and results, and then kind of preview the week to come for the high school football season. So first game on our matchup list here was Parma at Three Rivers, homecoming for the Wildcats. Looked like another tough outing for the Cats. Take a loss 42-7, moving them to 0-3 on the season. Lane, what do you got for us here?
Yeah, like you said, Jordan, it was real tough sledding for our local Wildcats. Parma pretty much on every facet of the game dominated. They rushed for almost 300 yards, passing almost for 160. Interesting enough, though, when you look at the total offense for Parma, you would kind of think that time of possession would be pretty lopsided, but actually it was decently even. 26 minutes for Parma and about 22 minutes for Three Rivers. Just really seemed to me like the turnover battle is what killed them a lot. Three turnovers for TR, only one for Parma.
Yeah, that'll do it quick.
Just a quick shout out. So Gavin Buter, 9 for 24, 52 yards, a touchdown. Landon McKenzie, 18 carries, 54 yards. And Garen Gahan, 5 receptions, 35 yards, and 1 touchdown for the Wildcats.
Moving on here, we got Sturgis. Game we talked about a little bit last week as being a good test for the Trojans. They go up to Pawpaw, and another kind of lopsided affair. Pawpaw takes the win 49-0. Pawpaw looks tough this year. Everything I'm seeing, they've only allowed 7 points all year. They look to be a pretty tough out this season.
Yeah, and really this is just another one where offensively it was pretty lopsided. 301 yard total yardage for Pawpaw, 97 yards only for Sturgis. Time of possession was pretty even. Again, though, the rushing attack for Pawpaw was 288 yards to Sturgis is 66 on the ground. It looks to me, now granted we didn't see the game, but it almost appears to me just by the stats that it appears that it was more of a battle of field position for Pawpaw. It seemed like they probably got good field position, capitalized on every opportunity they had.
Yeah.
But just shouting out some stats for Sturgis, Riley Kane, 2 for 7, 31 yards. Jacob Thompson, 10 carries for 39 yards, and Roman Robinson, 1 reception, 26 yards.
So next on our list, the Centerville Bulldogs at home versus Cassopolis, the Rangers. This is another game we talked about being a good test. Centerville came in 2-0, Cass came in 2-0. Cass has always kind of been like a perennial power in the area. And Centerville handled them. 36-7 victory. I talked to an individual close to the program, and he said and that score really isn't as close as what the game was. He said the game was pretty close early, but really Centerville asserted themselves and kind of wore Cass down as the game went on. So that's a big win for the Bulldogs and sets up a big matchup next week.
Yeah, and Jordan, you're 100% correct. I mean, what looked to be the real deciding factor was the second quarter for the Bulldogs. Put up 22 in the second quarter against nothing for Cass. Overall, though, statistically, everything was decently close. Centerville 246 to Cass's 116. The thing that I gathered most from this is that Centerville's defense was nasty this past Friday. Looks like quite a few sacks, quite a bit of tackle for losses. So Centerville keeps that up. Spoiler, it's going to be a good game this upcoming week. That's going to be a fun one to watch.
Yeah, next week's setting up to be a good one. We'll get to that here in a few minutes. Next on our list, Constantine Falcons go over to Waterville Elite. This was another game. Theme of the week was blowouts. And fortunately for the Falcons, they were on the giving end of said blowout. They take Waterville Elite down 55-6. I'm going to go out on a limb. I have not looked at the stat lines, but I'm going to go out on a limb and guess Constantine rushed for a lot of yards.
And you are correct, my friend. Constantine just doing Constantine things, man. 451 rushing yards.
Woo, doggy.
To negative 20.
Wow.
Brayden Clark, 200 yards rushing, 2 touchdowns. Devontae Connolly, 71. Isaac Hall, 58 and 1 TD. Austin Gross, 53, 1 TD. Defensively, Austin Gross getting it done. 3 tackles, 1 INT. Carson Platts, 4.5 tackles. So if you want to say a dominating win, you're not going to see one much more than what Constantine did to the Panthers this past week.
Yeah, I would say so. moving forward, the Mendon Hornets had Decatur. I believe they were on the road at Decatur. And this is a game we said, you know, in years past may have been a little bit closer. But at the end of the day, you look at all the other scores in the county, and this was actually the closest game of the week. Mendon goes to Decatur, wins pretty comfortably, a 40-21 victory. But like I said, by comparison in the conference or in the county, this was actually the closest game we had.
Yeah, and like we said, Decatur earlier in the season's really been struggling to get anything going. But it looks like this game, they were able to move the ball quite well through the air. 282-0 for Decatur to Mendon. But Mendon doing Mendon things, 402 on the ground. So,
yep, that's very Hornets-esque there.
Jackson Kratzer, 164 for three TDs. Jaquan Hodges, 144 for three TDs. Carter Briggs getting it done defensively, 11 tackles. Yeah, just really another program doing their thing, just running the ball down people's throats.
Yep. Moving into our next game, White Pigeon goes to Hartford, gets a big win, 44-6. Big for the Chieftains to get their first win of the year after two just tough losses. You know, they lost to Mendon, lost to Centerville, which seems like we've said before, just kind of seeing like these are Mendon and Centerville set up to be the 1-2 in the conference. And it looks pretty good, or pretty close to me, like White Pigeon's going to be that solid number three. They got the two tough games out of the way, and I'm kind of thinking going forward here they might run the table. But
yeah, and you know, it's another case of school doing their thing. White Pigeon 419 on the ground to a Hartford's 86. No passing yards, but who needs to throw the ball when you're probably picking up 10 yards a carry. Anthony Rubio, 189, one touchdown on the ground. Dylan Carper, 118 for one touchdown on the ground. Colin Mayville, 78 yards, three touchdowns on the ground. Defensively, just doing their thing, man. I mean, Jackson Davison, 4.5 tackles. Dylan Carper, 4 tackles. Like we said earlier and last week, you know, this White Pigeon team may be 1-2, but that's not indicative of the level of talent for this team.
Yeah, they've just, you know, tough road to hoe to start the year. I mean, like I said, I really think the back half of their schedule, they're gonna rack up some
points. Yeah, I would agree with you.
So moving into the 8-man schedule, Burr Oak Bobcats headed to Battle Creek St. Philip and handled a 39-0 win to remain undefeated on the season. And again, in the lower level of the 8-man, looking like one of the dominant teams, their points for against is now 147-4-20. So Burr Oak doing Burr Oak things at this point. That's kind of a weird thing to say, but
yeah, it's what it Burr Oak is. Doing Burr Oak things. Matthew Green, 7-for-9, 172 yards, 3 touchdowns passing. Branson Hernandez, 4-for-9, 52 yards, 1 touchdown. Defensively, though, that's where it's really impressive. Dominic Hagan, 10 tackles, 1 INT. Cole Anderson, 11 tackles, 2 interceptions, 1 touchdown. So Burr Oak doing Burr Oak things. Those Bobcats, man, they look pretty fierce this year.
Yeah, I think they're going to make a pretty good run in the B division of 8-man. On the 8-man front again, Colon gets a big rebound win against Camden Frontier, 72-0. Rebounding from their loss last week. Kind of looked like they took out some frustrations there on the Redskins of Frontier, but 72-0 win for the Magic.
Yeah, and I mean, just looking statistically, I mean, it definitely reflects that 565-37 for total yardage. Only 9 passing yards for Camden Frontier, 28 rushing yards. So I mean, this Colon team, like you said, they took some anger out. And I mean, it wasn't like this was a gradual thing. This was, they put up 62 points in 2 quarters.
Yeah, well, that'll do it. So they played everybody else. Well, not that they have very many subs in 8-man, but they took the wheels or took the foot off the gas in the second half.
absolutely cooked them.
Yeah. So that's the kind of the recap for the games last week. Looking forward into next week, like I said, there's a couple solid matchups. One that I think would be really, really good to watch, really, really fun to watch in the county. But first game we got, Three Rivers has got to travel to Edwardsburg. And a little note here, Edwardsburg last week, their game, it was a forfeit, if I'm remembering correctly. Yep. Plainwell had to forfeit due to COVID precautions. So I don't know whether there was some contact tracing or positive testing going on there. I'm not sure. Do you know any more about that?
No, I believe the last I had seen that there was a possible positive case for a student athlete.
Okay. So, yeah, Edwardsburg coming off a forfeit win. But Edwardsburg in the last few years has been a dominant force. And this year had been no different coming in. They beat Vicksburg 58-7. And if you recall, Vicksburg put a thumping on Three Rivers a few weeks ago, so maybe another tough one for the Wildcats.
Yeah, this one, like you said, Edwardsburg, past few years, I believe they made a state championship run last year, didn't they? Or is that the year before?
The year before they went undefeated and won the state
title. Okay, so yeah. So, I mean, that's technically could be a team that still has state title talent on it. So, I mean, it's going to be tough sledding for Three Rivers. But as I always like to look at these kind of games, they're character builders. So,
yeah. Well, going back to 2014, Edwardsburg has not lost more than two games in a season. So
that's a pretty dominant program, if you ask me.
Yep. They've been rolling. So moving forward, Dowagiac travels to Sturgis. This is a game I think could be pretty good. Sturgis coming off a tough one at Pawpaw, but like we said, Pawpaw's, you know, they're good. They're a very good team. Dowagiac is 1-2 on the year. They beat Not Siegel last week in a close one, but didn't fare a whole lot better against Pawpaw when they played them in week one. So it'll be a good game for Sturgis. They're going to have to rebound and see if they can get that bad taste out of their mouth from their loss last
week. Yeah, absolutely. And that's a fun one. That's one I actually have highlighted. I think could be an interesting finish to that game.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if Sturgis can bounce back from that loss, because sometimes a big loss like that can be deflating especially for
high school kids. Exactly.
Moving forward, I want to skip. Oh no, not that one. Wait. Yes, I want to skip the next game on our list. I want to do that one last, because I think that's going to be the game of the week. Going down, we got Constantine at Fenville. Like I said, Constantine coming off a big win. Fenville has not won yet. Looks like defense is not the greatest thing for Fenville, as they've given up 50, 64, and 42 points this year. So I got a sneaky feeling this is going to be another 400-plus yard game on the ground.
I was going to say, if I had to guess the score on this one, I'm going to take Constantine 52-6.
Well, there's a number. So moving forward again here, White Pigeon coming off a big win. And like I kind of said earlier, I see the Chieftains kind of making, or Chiefs, I guess is what it is. I see them making a little push here the back half of the season. They do have Cass, and they got to go to Cass. Like we said, Cass is a good team. Cass coming off a tough loss to Centerville. White Pigeon played Centerville pretty tough. So I'm going to take in the Chiefs here. I think White Pigeon goes on a little run here and rattles off 4 or 5.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one, Jordan. I think, like I've been saying, that the record is not indicative of the talent of this team. And White Pigeon seems to have a pretty hard-nosed defense, which I could definitely see handling the Rangers this week.
Going into the 8-man games, Burr Oak playing North Adams Jerome. I can't even begin to tell you where that is or anything, but they are 2-1 on the year. Looks like they put up some decent amount of points. Got beat by Tekontra last week, 36-8. And just as a kind of a like opponents thing, Burr Oak beat Tekontra 54-12. So if those numbers match up to anything, Burr Oak looks to be on course to another good
win. Yeah, I think Burr Oak cruises this week. And to answer your question, North Adams Jerome High is in North Adams, Michigan, which is Hillsdale County. So there you go.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, obviously can't be that far away because they're playing in the same counties here. But just not something I've heard of with these smaller schools. I mean, the enrollments are pretty low for a lot of them. So our last 8-man game, Colon facing Athens, the Indians at home. Like I said, Colon coming off that thumping. Athens is 1-2 on the year. Got a win last week versus Bellevue. But I got a pretty good feeling Colon's going to roll.
Yeah, I definitely think so, though. But watch out for Colon. I feel like I'm like Corso right now.
Not so fast, my friend.
No, Colon, it's always great to ride that high. So hopefully they can get back to business and stay focused, because I could see Athens giving them a little bit of a run.
Yeah. So then the game we skipped over and I wanted to come back to is a game I think is going to be the game of the week here in the county. Centerville going to Mendon. Battle of 3-0 teams in the Southwest 10 Conference. All intents and purposes, this is like a conference championship game. I mean, these two teams are both undefeated. These two teams have both handled their opponents fairly decently. If historical data tells us anything, Mendon would be the favorite here, and it being in Mendon probably helps a little bit. I don't know. It'll be an interesting game. It'll be a fun one to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if you want to watch an old school just slugfest. This is going to be the game for you. Yeah. I'm going to take Mendon. I'm taking Mendon like 15-8, real low scoring.
I'm going to combat. I'll go on the other end of that. I'll take Centerville. I like Centerville. I agree, low scoring. I could see like a 21-19 kind of game, something like that. Pretty low scoring game. Not a lot of possessions, and I think if somebody forces a turnover, yeah, that could be huge.
Exactly.
So football wise, I think that kind of covers everything for football. We did have a couple volleyball matchups this week that are pretty big matchups. Three Rivers traveling to Edwardsburg. Both of those teams, I believe, are still undefeated in conference play. And this looks to be a big match for deciding the Wolverine Conference for the volleyball season,
yeah,
this year.
It's volleyball, and this is something that I'm not as familiar in, but like we said, it's high school sports. We're going to be getting more accustomed. But Three Rivers, they've got some athletes out there, man.
Yeah, even back to when I was in school, the girls' sports in Three Rivers have always been pretty dang competitive in the conference. And then the other matchup we had is Mendon at Bangor. Mendon, in the last, I guess it's been a while, their volleyball team has been a pretty statewide known program. But I know at 14-1 right now on the season, they are one of the higher ranked teams, and I don't know what the divisions are in volleyball, if it's A, B, C, D, or how it works, but I know they are one of the higher ranked teams in their division for volleyball this year. So that,
yeah, and they're really led by, her name is Anna Smith. This past weekend, she's a senior, just recorded her 2000th career kill. So I mean, that's impressive. I think it's only 19 other players have done that in MHSAA.
I haven't been drinking.
I swear.
Well, I can't attest to that. I can't claim that same.
But just shouting out some statistics from this past weekend for them: Anna Smith, 9 aces, 54 kills, 7 blocks, 26 digs. Let's see here. Also have Riley Mullen, 9 kills, 3 blocks, 1 assist, 4 digs. Peyton Griffith, 1 assist, 48 digs. So I mean, this is a pretty well-rounded team. Just to close it out, McKenna Cup, 4 aces, 2 kills, 2 blocks, 77 assists, and 17 digs. So, I mean, if you want to put money on a team to repeat as a possible state champion or go back, I would definitely take this Hornets team.
Yeah, it looks like it's set up to be a good one this week. So I think locally, that's the news that we have. Like I said, if you have any names we butchered, or if you have something you want us to preview or something we missed on, let us know. Send us a message on Facebook. If you have a way to get a hold of us directly, you can. If not, reach out to Alec at Watershed Voice. He can get a hold of us. We want to make this local segment as good as we can and be informational for all of you guys, because at the end of the day, this is about the county and getting all the information out that we can. So I think that covers everything we want to do with that. So I think we'll take a quick break here, and we will get into our college football segment.
All right, so now we're going to break down some college football here, Jordan and I will.
I'm so excited.
See, this is like Christmas for Jordan.
Yeah, I love it.
I just wish I could see your face right now. Because I think it would just be...
everybody, though?
Yes, it would be glowing right now.
Maybe we can get on the video streaming at some point.
Hey, you never know. Alec, hook us up, man.
We did do the one live broadcast, and I actually think that went pretty well. Maybe that's something to experiment with.
Yeah, might have to. Not a bad idea. Anyways, so getting back on track here. So with the Big Ten coming up in the next, 3 weeks?
Yeah, 3 weeks from, 23rd. So, yeah.
Yeah, so if you guys didn't already know, Big 12 already has a few games under their belt. Seems to be nobody actually wants to win the Big 12 this year.
Kind of what it feels like.
So, Oklahoma lost to Iowa State.
After losing to Kansas State.
So, Spencer Rattler, not the savior of the program that I think he likes to think he is, but...
Is it safe to say that Lincoln Riley needs a transfer quarterback?
That's a Heisman contender every season?
I mean, everybody kind of praises him.
Yeah, and you know, and I think that's our, I think that's kind of our topic for college football this week is Lincoln Riley overrated?
You know, it's a fair argument. I mean, it really, really is. The dude has never had defense.
No.
Ever. He's just relied on outscoring everybody. And yeah, that's great 90% of the time until you run into a team that can actually play defense and keep the game in the 30s. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you can't put up 45 or 50 on them, you're in trouble. And that's the case here. Spencer Rattler clearly is not Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, any of those guys. And talented as he may be, I don't know if he's ready for the spotlight.
No, I don't think he is. No, don't get me wrong. He's what, a sophomore?
He's a redshirt freshman. So yeah.
So he's a redshirt freshman. So, I mean, he still has a lot of time to learn and grow.
Right.
It's not to say that 2 years down the road that he's not a Heisman candidate and then everybody's singing Lincoln Riley's praises right now. But
sure,
it's easy to win a boatload of ball games when you have the number one quarterback in the NFL draft for 2 years in a row.
Right. Three,
and you could almost argue that Jalen Hurts was on that course last season.
Oh, yeah.
Until he ran into the bulk of his schedule.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, is it fair to say that Lincoln Riley may have missed his window to get an NFL job?
I think he did.
Because, yeah. Like, if – I mean, Oklahoma's 0-2 right now in conference.
Mm-hmm.
And their one win is against St. Mary's Sister of the Blind, whoever the hell it was they played. I mean, and the two teams they lost to aren't even picked to be in the top half of the league.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, with that being the case, what does it look like when they play Texas this week? What does it look like when they play Oklahoma State? What does it look like when they face the upper echelon of the conference?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they go 500, does Lincoln Riley even get considered? Now, in Norman, maybe that's what they for kind of fans might be hoping for. You know, as a in the shortened season, that it's always this season's always going to have an asterisk by it. Is it really a full season? Does it really count? You know, there's all the rumblings of Lincoln Riley leaving. Maybe it's best for them if they do have a 500 season and they keep Lincoln Riley around.
And that's very true. And I mean, I definitely think if you're a diehard Oklahoma fan, you're a lot like an Ohio State fan, an Alabama fan, a Clemson fan. You expect to be, you know, top six every season, and anything short of that is failure.
Sure.
But way you put that, though, I mean, it does make sense because, I mean, Lincoln Riley was rumored for the Cowboys job. I'm sure if he was doing well, he'd be rumored for the Texans job.
Oh, don't get that twisted. He will be. Now that Dabo Swinney came out and said that he's not doing it.
I mean,
Lincoln will be the next name.
Yeah, you could see a Lincoln Riley get rumored in the Texans. I mean, in all reality, who's to say that if the Lions let Patricia go, he's not rumored for that? I mean,
his name's going to get floated.
Yeah, when you see the success that Cliff Kingsbury's had in the NFL, it's going
to
get
not even close to as successful as what Lincoln Riley was in college.
No, he was mediocre
at best.
So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens for Lincoln Riley. But I'm a lot with you. Maybe it might be best for that program that they do finish 500. The talks stop. They can focus on the program and continue to grow.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a little overreacting to say that he's overrated, but I do think it's going to shine some light on him in these next couple weeks if things don't get better.
Mm-hmm.
And I know he's the head coach and he's responsible for the offense, but at some point you have got to address how terrible that defense is. Terrible, like not bad. Charles Barkley, terrible.
Terrible. That's terrible, man.
I mean, they'll never win. You can never win a national title with a defense like that. Ever.
Oh, God, no. Especially when you're playing against an Alabama, an Ohio State, a Clemson, a Florida.
Those teams, I mean, could you imagine? There's no way.
No,
I mean, I
could hear your wheels turning over here, man.
I'm just like, it baffles me that this program that is considered in the top six of college football, how do they not have a defense? How is that possible? I don't get it.
So I guess if we're going to talk a little bit Oklahoma, we didn't put it down the agenda, but I'm going to ask the question, what's wrong with Texas?
What's wrong with Texas is the same thing that's wrong with Michigan. The expectations are so goddamn high. Oops, I probably shouldn't have said that.
Jordan.
Apologies. Expectations are so high for those programs that they're unrealistic. I mean,
that's fair.
Now, I do think that Tom Herman is overrated.
Yeah.
I am not a believer in Tom Herman, and I wasn't a believer in Tom Herman when he got that job. Having said that, if they fire Tom Herman, don't think for a second they won't hesitate to call Urban Meyer.
Oh, I mean, and if you're Urban Meyer and you can control the entire state of Texas for recruiting,
yeah,
that's no brainer.
That could be deadly. But I don't think that's what happens because I have a different thing in my mind for Urban Meyer. But since my USC thing got torpedoed by the alumni and everything there. But we'll get to that on another podcast.
Damn, it's leaving me in suspense.
Do you want to know what I'm thinking?
Yeah, I want to know what you're thinking.
Okay, so my theory on this is, and this we can kind of make this roll into what we were talking about a little bit, I think. I might have to really make a big circle, but I can do it. My prediction for this season is that Alabama goes undefeated and wins the national title.
Okay.
And I don't think it's even particularly close. I think this Alabama team is ungodly good. I mean, the biggest question they had was, can Mac Jones lead them? And he's looked extremely good so far. So I think Alabama rolls. No pun intended there with the roll tide. And then I think Nick Saban retires and goes out on top.
Oh, don't say it.
And then I think Urban Meyer is the first name that Alabama calls. Yeah.
Oh.
Speaking of, we wanted to get into dark horse candidates. I think Urban Meyer would become the dark horse candidate for the Alabama job. Oh. It just makes too much sense right now because Nick Saban has flat out said that this offseason of recruiting was the worst he's ever had to deal with all the COVID stuff, and he's not in tune with all this technology. And with what happened with this, the recruiting world is going to change forever because of this.
Yeah.
And I just don't know if Saban wants to put up with it. If he goes out with an undefeated team and a national title, what better way for him to ride into the sunset? He goes down as the greatest college football coach of all time. And it's not a question. Now, Dabo would obviously have a shot at him. But, I mean, it just makes too much sense. And then who's going to replace him at Alabama? There's not really another – they're not going to, like, promote within the ranks. So why wouldn't they go big?
But they're not going to settle either.
And then Urban can just do whatever the hell he wants down there. I mean, they don't care about rules in the South.
They just want to win.
Right. He showed that at Florida. So.
Oh.
Bold prediction, but, you know.
Oh, my.
I know. I wanted to. You told me to go there.
I did. I did. And I regret it because now my stomach hurts. Thanks, Jordan.
Well, you're welcome.
So what I do. So speaking of dark horses, we're going to kind of. I'm going to reel it back in a little bit because I'm the one that caused it to go off the rails. For the Big 12, who do you think your dark horse would be to win the conference?
Well, so there's two different ways I'd approach this. Dark horse to me, I think it's somebody that not everybody's thinking about. And to me, it's TCU. Gary Patterson traditionally plays good defense. And they've looked solid in their first few games, obviously. I wouldn't say anybody in the Big 12 has looked great, but they've looked solid. So TCU would be my dark horse. The team I think wins the conference is actually Oklahoma State.
Okay.
Oklahoma State was actually one of my picks to win it before the season, and then their quarterback got hurt on like the second possession of the season, and he's been out since, and they're still 3-0.
Okay.
So I think Oklahoma State ends up winning it. I could see an Oklahoma State TCU game, maybe even Iowa State.
Okay.
I don't believe in Texas. I think Texas loses again. I don't believe in until Oklahoma can stop somebody, I don't even think they can be in the conversation.
Okay. So I'm going to kind of go really kind of dark horse, which is all could be foiled this weekend, but I'm going to go K-State.
I thought you might go that way.
And it's solely because, I mean, K-State goes to TCU this weekend, which is going to be a huge test. But then they've got 2 weeks after that, on the 24th, they have Kansas at home, which Kansas, unless Miles isn't proven to be anything. They go,
yeah, that's pretty bad.
They go on the road to West Virginia, which that's a haul. But then they're on at home against OK State, on the road to Iowa State, which Iowa State, you don't know what team they're going to put on the field.
Right.
On the road to Baylor, which Baylor, it's not the Baylor of old. And then finally they close at home against Texas, which Texas isn't blowing the doors off anybody.
Right.
So I think at the beginning of the season, you looked at this K-State team and you thought, well, they lost to Arkansas State. What's going to happen with them? I mean, they can't control their destiny because they're undefeated in conference play right now.
Yeah. And they've, you know, obviously the win against Oklahoma. And then last week, they played Texas Tech. Was that who it was?
Yeah. Yep.
So, you know, it's the Big 12 right now is wide open, in my opinion. I think there's every single team in the conference has a legitimate case except for Kansas.
Yeah. No, I would agree with you wholeheartedly, man. I think that OK State, November 7th, that OK State game is going to be huge for them. Well, I mean, yeah, but at this absolutely. Point, they could drop to TCU and they could drop to West Virginia, and I look like a fool, which is something I do quite often. So,
well, you know, that's part of doing this. So, on the spot, gun to your head, does it Clemson, Alabama win ACC and SEC?
Yes.
And then, do you think? We'll get to playoff stuff later.
Oh, see, now you've poked me.
Yeah, we've already gone down one rabbit hole. We'll save it for another week. Got to keep the people coming back.
Damn it, Jordan. Now I've got it marinating.
Now just think about that for a week, and maybe we'll touch on it next week. But
next week,
we don't know if there's going to be time, because next week is everybody's favorite week. It's deep dive week. So next week, I will be giving you the deep inner trenches look at the Michigan Wolverines. And Lane will be going deep inside the Mel Tucker-led Michigan State Spartans. So if you want all the juicy knowledge and tidbits about your beloved Spartans or Wolverines, next week is the episode for you.
Absolutely. We're going to be dealing up some stats, some predictions, maybe some record predictions.
Some hot takes. I got a couple hot takes for you.
I got some too.
See, I don't even write notes down for this stuff, though. This is all off the cuff.
You see, and if I don't, I blank, so I have to.
Yeah, I live for this. So, all right, before we get down another tangent on college football, you got anything else, or do you want to go ahead and roll into the final part of this and your favorite part of the day?
Let me just cry my sorrows away about the Lions. We'll be back in a few. All right, so you heard the music. You know it's that time. It's a good and the bad, the ugly, for a Lions 35-29 loss to the New Orleans Saints. Spoiler alert, there's no good. There's no bad. It's just stinking ugly. So I'm not going to dive deep into this game. Most of us watched it. I mean, the Lions, what more can be said? They get a 14-0 lead against a absolutely depleted Saints team, and it looks like they're in charge. And instead of us letting off the gas in the second half, we just let off the gas halfway through the first quarter.
Mm-hmm.
So we allow Drew Brees to do Drew Brees things and just get guys open and get guys that you've never friggin' heard of over 100 yards. And you look at this team and you just wonder, what the hell is what is this?
It had to hurt really bad after the game, and Brees in his press conference said, yeah, we were really, really, really banged up this week.
Yeah. And it's exhausting at this point. It is exhausting being a Detroit Lions fan. It's kind of like I tell my wife, you know, I'm loyal because I'm a Michigan State and a Detroit Lions fan. We go through a load of crap. So, you know, I'm loyal. Yeah. Anyways, so we're not going to get into the ugliness of it. Like I said, we saw it. We know it happened. There's no pressure There's nothing, no turnovers. It's just god awful. I mean, just one key stat that I do want to point out is this is the 20th double digit blown lead in the Matt Patricia era since 2018. And you look at Matt Patricia.
That's it? I thought there'd be more than that.
Well, I mean, that's it. But I mean, you look at his record, he's like 10-25-1. You blow 20 of those. You flip that around. Like, you look at that record and you're talking best coach in the league. I mean,
yeah.
It's ugly.
Same old Lions,
man. So I've actually got a clip here that we're gonna listen to. Dan Orlovsky this week has absolutely gone in on Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia. This is going to be the first time Jordan's heard the clip. We're going to listen to it, and then we're going to discuss kind of Dan Orlovsky's take and then where we think the Lions can go from here. So I'm going to get this puppy playing, and we'll be ready to go. So be about a minute. We'll listen to it. We'll talk about it.
Well, he says that there's a lot of work to get done when he got to Detroit. So my question is, what was the work? Because was it rebuilding a roster? No, that roster was healthy. Was it becoming a consistent winner? No. Jim Caldwell in his four seasons won 36 games, tied for the most ever in the history of the Lions organization. Was it rebuilding the culture of the locker room? No. I was there. I was in it every single day. It was probably the best culture, locker room-wise, that I had been in my 12-year career. Was it rebuilding the image in the community? Nope. The community absolutely loved that head coach and football team. So what was the work that you say needed to get done? If you're going to tell me that the work was to win the games that were the big games versus the teams that were winners and win the big division championship, fine. If that's the work that you say you had to get done, I'll give you that. You failed at that. The truth is then that if that's the work, you have failed at that. And then don't start deflecting questions and saying, I'm only going to talk about now. Don't ask your players to be accountable to themselves if you can't do that as a head coach.
Hashtag preach.
So, I mean, you listen to that, and this is Dan Orlovsky, the quarterback of our 0-16 season, which brought us Matt Stafford. But he's not wrong. I mean, you listen to what he had to say. Matt Patricia has said, I had a lot of work to do, which, yes, you did, because Jim Caldwell had an absolutely abysmal record against winning teams. I think he was 4-24, 3-24, something like that, against teams with winning records. So you're winning games you should win, but you weren't winning anything outside of that with Jim Caldwell. But you took a 9-7 team, which Jim Caldwell had the best winning percentage, or tied for the best winning percentage in Lions history, and then you completely bankrupted them. And I mean, you've listened to the other podcasts that I've done, and I start out season saying, oh, we shouldn't fire Matt Patricia. And then the following week, I was like, yeah, we need to start thinking about it. And the last week, I was like, eh, I don't know. But now, I mean, you looked at this team, there was no fight. There was just nothing. It was just blah. So
I think blah is putting it lightly.
Yeah, I want to keep it PG. What I really want to say is something that probably I'll get a text from Alec going, what the hell are you doing? But but you know, you just look at this Lions team. They have the talent. Offensively, you could argue maybe one of the best offensive teams we've ever had. Stafford's looked horrible. Play calling has been god awful. I mean, Bevel has been so blah with everything he's done this season. It's bad. So, I mean, you're in the bye week and you look at the Houston Texans, who started off 0-4 and fired
Bill O'Brien.
Bill O'Brien. Yeah, definitely not Bill O'Reilly. O'Brien. And he's coming off two division championships and they fired him at 0-4. Now, granted, backstory, they traded away first and second round picks. They picked up David Johnson for DeAndre Hopkins, which is, I think, one of the worst trades ever done in the NFL.
It ranks right up there.
But the Texans said, all right, enough is enough. See ya. And you look at the Lions, and it doesn't help that Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia are best friends. And you look at this situation now, and you're like, what are you waiting for?
Yeah. Well, it's like you said when we were talking before we even started recording this. It's like, what's going to happen? Is there going to they're going to ride this out a little bit with him, and then it'll get to a point where it's okay. We finally got a it's shit or get out the pot time, and they're gonna fire him, and then the Lions will go on and win three or four games in a row and screw themselves out of a draft pick and end up picking 10th or something.
Yeah, we'll end up picking 10th. We'll definitely be out of Trevor territory, be out of Justin Fields territory, and be out of Trey Lance territory.
So what is Stafford's contract like? Didn't he restructure to take less money?
He's taking less money, which now you look at his contract, and it's actually a steal compared to what everybody else is making right now.
Right.
Excuse me.
So is it a situation where you could try to, if things are still bad, you spin him at the deadline for picks? I mean, this isn't like baseball and like fantasy where those kind of things happen. I don't know if that's a thing.
I don't think you're going to see him move at the deadline. I really don't. I mean, it's hard to move a franchise quarterback and expect him to step into a team halfway through the season and expect him to do something. And especially in a season like this one where you didn't have a lot of preparation time anyways.
Right.
But I definitely think this could be something you see this offseason. The market for him definitely heat up. I mean, there's plenty of teams out there that could use a franchise quarterback. I mean, one of them we're super familiar with is the New Orleans Saints. I mean, they have Jameis as their two, but what's to say that they don't want to throw Stafford in with a great offensive line and great weapons and a decent defense and see what he does? I mean,
the first team that came to mind for me, and well, there's two teams now that I just thought about it. The first team that came to mind was the Indianapolis Colts, because Philip Rivers can't be around much longer.
No, I think he got a 1-year contract. So I mean, Rivers and Indy would be a great fit.
And then just tug at my heartstrings a little bit, and we could send him to Vegas, and the Raiders would take him.
You see, and Derek Carr is doing a good job though.
Yeah, but I think the only problem I have with Derek Carr is I think the ceiling for him is he's at his ceiling already.
Yeah, that's fair.
I don't see him making that step to take them to elite. They have talent all over the place now.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah. Maybe Stafford's that piece.
I mean, you could.
I've always been a Stafford guy. And mm-hmm. I've been a Stafford defender, and there's not a lot I can defend because he has been awful.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't say he doesn't have a running game because he's got three running backs behind him that all run hard and bring different things. The offensive line hasn't been great, but it's been solid.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest problem they have is their defense is horrible. He's got weapons to throw to. So, I mean, I don't know if it's all the injuries over his career are finally piling up on him, and he's just gun-shy. I don't know what it is, but he has not been
good. No, he hasn't. And actually, just kind of throwing it out there, two teams that I could see interesting for him to end up on, one of them is Denver. I think the Drew Lock experiment hasn't worked out there.
No, definitely not.
And then another one, if we keep Bob Quinn, Tennessee. I mean, you've got Tannehill. Tannehill is extremely limited on what he can do.
Right. What about New England?
You see, I think they re-sign Cam.
You think so?
Yeah, I think Cam's going to retire a Patriot.
Yeah, that could be. Seems like a decent fit.
Yeah. So
it'll be interesting. I think it's tank for Trevor time.
See, and I hate the thought process because you're already throwing in the towel. But
you're 1-3. I mean, how many teams in the history of the NFL have come back from 1-3 to make playoffs?
No, not a lot. That'd be an interesting stat to look up, though.
I bet you it's not very many, if any.
I bet you it's not a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't. I don't see it. What benefit do you get? You slip into the playoffs, get knocked out first round, and you screw your draft pick up anyways.
It's true.
Like, best case scenario for this team is they barely slide into the playoffs and get beat first round. Am I right?
Yeah.
So is it worth it? No. I think you clean house. Send everybody packing. Fire them all. Hopefully the Fords get out of there and you can get a real owner that wants to do something. And you start over new next year with a number one pick and a shiny new quarterback.
See, I think
If it's Trey Lance, if it's Justin Fields, if it's Trevor Lawrence, I don't care. Personally, it's Lawrence in my book. I don't care. I think you just you strip it down to bones and you start over fresh.
You see, and if we're going to start over fresh, I guess that the question then is who's the coach to lead them? And I have three that I'm interested in.
Before you name any of them,
It has to be an offensive-minded coach. Has to be. There's no more of this run control and defense bullshit in the NFL. It's got to be somebody that can put up points. We just said that Cliff Kingsbury was average in college football and is doing very good things now with Arizona.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I agree. And I want to maybe this next week I'll sit down and I'll do some statistics on defensive-minded coaches against offensive-minded coaches and what their records look like in the NFL right now.
Yeah.
But if I were to look at three names for the Lions job, I think one of them, and he's on everybody's hot list, is Eric Bieniemy from Kansas City, offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. I think he's on everybody's list. How he doesn't have a head coaching job yet is beyond me.
Yeah, there was rumors that he was going to get the Colorado job after Mel Tucker left.
Yeah, and he'd be a fun one in college.
He's an alum from there. Yeah, so, I mean,
it makes sense. So then my number two was Greg Roman, offensive coordinator. See, I don't mind Greg Roman. But
I'm indifferent.
But see, now the third one, and this is an interesting name, and the more I think about it, the more I like it, because he's young, he's innovative.
No way. I know where you're going.
I'm going Joe Brady.
No way. Dude, he's like 37. He's
31.
Even worse. No way. Absolutely.
Why would you not want to do that? Something that's young, exciting. He's making Teddy Bridgewater look incredible. He's taken a team without Christian McCaffrey, the undoubted best player in the NFL right now. And
do you honestly think that a 32-year-old coach is going to get the respect of a locker room?
Do you think the locker room has respect for Matt Patricia right now?
No, but you're going to try to make it worse with some kid? I like what Joe Brady's done. I mean, he's a great mind. I think he's got another 3 or 4 years as an offensive coordinator before he can be considered in a head coaching job. You're talking about putting somebody way out over his skis if you do that, and you could ruin him for his
career. You could, but you know, and here's the flip side of it. Now I'm going to change sports real quick. The one of them that everybody said there's no way it's going to work, and it's way out of his league, and it's never going to happen, is Brad Stevens in Boston. You took a young coach from a no-name school, and you put him in a position to lead not the Minnesota Timberwolves, the Boston Celtics, who have multiple banners in their rafters, to lead them. I think a change of pace in Detroit could be good. Now, whether or not it blows up, you don't know. But we've been going through these battle-hardened coaches for decades, and what has it gotten us?
Man, I don't know. I
want Joe Brady, man.
I'd be so uneasy about that. I mean, I guess it's the sexy, it's the flashy pick, but man.
And here's the thing, and here's why I want Joe Brady, because we know Matt Stafford, he's probably got a couple years left in a Lions jersey tops. Yeah. You draft, if you do fail in this season, which all indications show that we're going to, and you say you end up top five. Say you end up two. Take Justin Fields at two. Put Joe Brady in. Allow him to move around, make a similar offense to what they're doing in Carolina. You have the weapons offensively to make it work. And just see what happens. That's all I'm saying.
I just think that's a hell of a gamble.
I mean, we have to gamble at this point. I mean, when's the last time we won a playoff game? I mean, we played it safe with Patricia, and now look.
Was that? I don't know. I just, man. Yeah, I guess we'll see.
We'll see, man.
I could be way wrong and way off base, but I just don't like that
idea. I love it. I love it. I want something new and exciting for this Lions team.
Well, I want flashy. And I guess you ain't going to get a lot more flashy than that.
I'm telling you.
Unless you bring in something like an Urban Meyer.
He won't come to Detroit.
No, he won't come to the NFL.
If he came to the NFL, I could see like the Jets or something like that, some big market team.
Yeah, I don't know.
But I digress.
Man, I just keep thinking. You got my gears spinning.
See, like, act like, sit down and think about it and think about Joe Brady running the Lions.
I just keep thinking that he'd be 32 years old.
I'm going to do a quick Google real quick. Because I just want to see if I have his age right. Yeah, he's 31.
I don't know, man. I guess time will tell with how this season progresses, yeah, though.
I mean, it's something's got to change with the Lions, right?
So, yeah, you got to start exactly. somewhere, I guess. So I think, I don't know, we rambled a lot longer than we wanted to, so we're definitely going to go over our time that we wanted, but hey, yeah, that happens.
Stuff happens, man.
Did you have any more that you wanted to cover?
No.
Can we close her down?
I think I'm good. Just want to thank everybody for tuning in last week. We had a great listener base. Thank you guys for giving us an opportunity to fill your ears for a little bit of time. Again, thank Watershed Voice for allowing us to partner with you. If you haven't yet let, make sure you follow us on Twitter, Facebook, drop us a like, drop us a comment, rate us on all your favorite podcasting streaming sites. And we'll talk to you next week. Go green.
Go blue.